I'm just waiting for Elishama to come. I'm waiting for Elishama to show. No, the show. Thank you very much. Okay. Firstly, thank you, Wayu, very much. Thank you, Elishama, very much from the sperm sale. Eitan, the Shatchin, thank you. And thank you, everybody, for coming. There's a story written by a well-known Yiddish writer called Oib Nishnach Hecher, if not higher. The story goes like this. There was a Litvak, a Misnagid, who could not tolerate the fact that these Hasidim venerated the Rebbe to such an extent they believed things about him that just could not be true. Among them was, they said that Ergeitavan and Slichas in Himmel. He goes to say Slichas in Shamayim. He said, give me a break. No, really. So in order to burst the bubble, he traveled to that shtetla, and he went there, and the first day Slichas, the Rebbe wasn't there. He said, where's the Rebbe? Ergeitavan Slichas in Himmel. He went to say Slichas in Shamayim. He said, come on. And he realized that the only way he could actually shatter this image was to ambush and prove that the Rebbe was an imposter. So he laid outside the Rebbe's house in the wee hours of the morning, and then the Rebbe opened the door and threw an axe over his shoulder, took some rope and coil and put it on his waist, and he went out to the woods. And from behind, the Litvak followed at a safe distance. When he finally found what he was looking for, he lowered the rope and took the axe and began to fell the tree. It was knocked over. He then cut it into timber, tied it up in the rope, and then hurried across the alley and put it on the stoop of a widow that she'd have wood for the winter. And then it was still early in the morning, and this misnagid went to shul of the chassidim. He said, what do you say about a rebbe? Egeitam slichas in Himmel. He goes to say slichas in Shemayim, to which he commented, Oib nishnach hecher, if not higher. Every story I ever encountered about Rabbi Kellermer from West Hempstead, Zichron Levracha, was always that punchline. Whatever you say about him, if not higher, whatever you can say. Now, the fact of the matter is, Peretz was a humanist, a secularist. His point was to show the championing of charity over religious rights. But that kind of dichotomy never existed for Rabbi Kellermer, meaning there was no Yiddishkeit and Menschlichkeit, they were one and the same. They were not symbiotics, they were just part of the very same. The Rabbi Kellerman, who's the angel of benevolence, could not be separated from the Gadol B'Torah. And he broadcast to his actions how one who is immersed in Torah is supposed to conduct themselves. There are many conundrums in the Rabbi Kellerman story. Perhaps the greatest of all is how you have this Gadol B'Yisrael major, Posek, becomes a rabbi in Young Israel community. But we can start much earlier than that. He was born in 1946, which technically made him a baby boomer. What's going on in 1946? 12 million soldiers just came back from the European and the Asian theaters, and they're shucking their uniforms to begin their new life, what has been labeled the greatest generation. So with this new generation, if you know the image of Rosie the Riveter, it's supposed to be a whole new world. And it's not a world that is so conducive to producing an Adam Gadol. What's happening in the 1950s? Well, in the 1950s, Joe DiMaggio is not yet retired from baseball. A new franchise opens up in Illinois called McDonald's. The craze of America is the hula hoop, and the heartthrob of America, which I cannot say in yeshiva, even though this is the science building. I can't say it, but if you know anatomy, it sounds like pelvis. That's what's happening in America. It's not an auspicious time and period to grow, to nurture an Adam Gadol. And yet, his family is from Miami. They travel all the way to Los Angeles. And his older brother is a student in Yeshiva University, and he realizes clearly that his mission in life is to get his younger genius brother into yeshiva, believing, if I get him to yeshiva, this will change the face of American Jewry. Now, this is quite an ambitious plan, to get a kid from Los Angeles to New York, because he figures once he gets him to New York, then he'll be able to channel him to yeshiva. The problem is, the problem is that the kid has no interest in going to yeshiva, nor do the parents have any interest in going to yeshiva. And it's a transcontinental trip. So he has a plan that is extraordinarily ambitious. It's also harebrained. And it's extraordinarily out of the box. Which reminds me of the story. A disgruntled worker went to his boss's funeral, and he went over to the casket and said, "Okay, Gary, now who's thinking outside the box?" Okay, so now his plan is to get his brother. And his plan, he comes upon the following scheme. If he enters Chidon HaTanach, and he's the winner, then they will travel him transcontinental to New York. That's a very ambitious plan. But he figures his brother is so smart, if he enters it, he'll win it. And the crazy thing is, that is precisely what happens. He wins Chidon HaTanach, this ninth grader, travels to New York. His brother sends him down to Baltimore, to Nei Yisrael. Now, we're talking about pretty significant wardrobe enhancements. We go from Miami, Los Angeles, shorts, T-shirt, down to Nei Yisrael. We can call that school clothes, or maybe even Technicolor. Still. Then, what does he do? He has to go to, comes Pesach time, what does he do with his brother? They send him, can't send him back to the West Coast, he sends him up to grandparents in Detroit. While in Detroit, Rabbi Avram, well he's not yet Rabbi, Avram Mordechai Yisbi, who will later become the Gedolim of Yishalayim, tells him, "You don't belong in Israel, you should go to Tells." And he literally takes him by the hand, puts him on the Greyhound bus for Cleveland, Ohio. So now it's another shift in that wardrobe from Technicolor to monochrome, greasy, Tells. As he arrives in Tells, the boys are outside playing baseball. The biggest maspid in the Beis Medrash, Yankel Cohn, hits a home run literally and figuratively. And Yehuda Kellerman has not yet bought into this whole yeshiva shtick, but when he sees the kid, the best one in yeshiva, hits a home run, this is rather compelling for him. He leaves behind black and white Kansas. He walks into Beis Medrash, and it's goosebump territory. He hears the sing-song, and he hears that rumbling you hear in childhood when you make a decision that from now on, I'm going to continue, and I'm not going back. He's made his commitment. He's going to be involved in Torah, leaving behind black and white Kansas. Then, the next pretty unconventional part is, when did a roommate ever recommend a roommate for a roommate? In other words, it is common, and it'll happen to some of you, I believe, it's not uncommon for someone to recommend their chavrusa for their sister, or to marry a chum from yeshiva for their sister, or the other way around. But when did a roommate ever recommend a roommate for a roommate? Whoever said, "My roommate would be perfect." Perfect. But that's what Rav Chaim Valkin, the great mashgiach who died last year, said about his sister for his roommate, Yehuda Kellerman. They get married in 1966, and then, very unusually, almost inexplicably, they travel to Yerushalayim to learn at the feet of Chaim Shmulevitz in the Mir, and he will do weekly shemesh by Rav Eliashiv. Not very common. As a matter of fact, Rav Eliashiv said about him that his psukim can be relied upon. That sounds pretty far. For Rav Eliashiv, that's major. Now, the neighborhoods we're familiar with adjacent to the Mir, such as Arzei Avira, Sanhedrin Murchevet, Malot Tafna, Ramat Eshkol, not only do they not yet exist, they're not even under Israeli sovereignty. So he's learning in the Mir, however, how in the world is he going to pay for all this learning? So he has this plan, I guess we can call this 101 Keynesian Kellerman economics. You don't know about this, I'm 27, so I still remember. It used to be that in high demand in Israel, in great scarcity, was toilet paper and aluminum foil. And he figured, if I can somehow import toilet paper and aluminum foil, then I'll be able to make some lira and afford my learning. It was a great plan. But how does he have a plan that the Ministry of Finance and Industry, that eluded them, And he had a method of importation, which was his father-in-law, Ravalkin, was in charge of the Hashgacha of the Greek line. In those days, the cheapest way for a Bachar or for anyone to travel to Israel was to travel by boat. And if you would be the Mashgiach, then there was no car fare, you didn't get a salary either, and there's no position to schlep along toilet paper and aluminum foil. It was a good plan. But Rabbi Kellermer was very good at selling Torah. He was very good at inspiring people to Torah. As a soicher, making gainful employment, that wasn't his strength. So the Kellermers run out of money. They return to America. And he's interested in a rabbinical position in Brookline, Massachusetts. Brookline, or Boston, is the college capital of America. Young Israel Brookline, it is said, I don't believe it's true, but the rumor itself says a lot about it. It is said that Young Israel Brookline, there are more doctorates and PhDs, which are the same thing, than there are in Harvard and MIT combined. It is said that in the application form for Young Israel Brookline, before your name, it says doctor. Why would they want this yeshivish guy with the fuzzy beard? And the answer was, they recognized he was a scholar. They recognized his sincerity, his love of everyone. And he was a rub there, and he redefined the idea of public servant. One story. A woman from New York called up Rabbi Kellermer because her son was in college in Boston. That's like, duh, that's what you do in Boston, you go to college. Her son was in college, and he's going out with his friends drinking. Now, going out drinking is not a wise idea. And it's hard on the liver. And the boy was a diabetic, which meant he would be subject to a hyperglycemic attack, which could be fatal. So she has no intercourse. She goes, Rabbi Kellermer, I need you to find my son. Now, Boston, as we said, it's the college capital of America. It is also an Irish town. There are more pubs in Boston than there are in Dublin. And now you have, at 1 o'clock in the morning, Rabbi Kellermer looking nothing like a college kid or one who frequents a watering hole or a pub or a bar, going through pub through pub through pub. Boston's finest would take 5 detectives to try and locate this person. And there is Sherlock Kellermer looking and looking. I don't know the end of the story. But what other person would not have been dissuaded by the enormity of the task or just by the imposition of it all, but not Rabbi Kellermer? Rabbi Kellermer, leaving Brookline, comes to West Hempstead, Long Island. If you have the time, we're talking about 14 and a half hours, approximately, you can actually see on YouTube his installment. Everyone spoke. According to my estimation, the only one who didn't speak was the assistant assessor of property and taxes of Nassau County. Everyone is speaking, and Rabbi Kellermer, who gets up last, says, now, we spoke enough, it's time. Mor ma'at v'seh arbeh, it's time to get to work. Rabbi Kellermer's mastery of halacha is a huge advantage to any kehillah, to know all of Shulchan Aruch at your fingertips. Furthermore, he knew with Pesach how to be firm while still being sensitive and attentive. And as Rabbi J.J. Schachter will label it, he had the magic to make a Pesach work. People began to learn, if you had a Shiloh, the person you called was Rabbi Kellermer. Now, factually, Rabbi Kellermer was not the kind of person that you called at an average garden variety 7 o'clock in the evening. You would call him at 1 o'clock in the morning. The phone got very busy at 1 o'clock, then you'd call at 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock. People would set their alarms to call. One time Rabbi Kellermer was landing, and he had very severe pain in his inner ear, which brought an end to his flying days. So wherever he traveled, he had to either drive or take a train. So he had in his pockets at all times at least 4 phones. Whenever the phone would ring, he'd be fumbling in his pockets to see which phone was ringing, because he'd always buy a phone, these cheap burner phones, then he'd lose the charger, then he'd find the charger, and lose the phone, lose the phone, find the charger. He always had 4 different phones at least in his pocket. It is said that he would travel by train, that the Boston Fountain, Penn Station, was on a first-name basis with him. He was always there looking for one of his phones. One time he was traveling to Washington, D.C. He had 4 phones that were charging. He was talking on another phone. And this woman could not believe
totally incredulity, amazed, agog at Twitter, that for the entire ride, the whole time he was speaking on the phone. Finally, at the end, she said to him, "Are you my senator?" Couldn't believe a person could be so engaged in all the phone calls, whatever he was calling, to ask the shilas. Now, we spoke about the trains. His driving, there is actually no Lashon Hara here. It's super ape class. He was a terrible driver. His son Beryl told me he's not to be blamed. His teachers were the Bachram and Tells. But we can say in Yeshivish, it was a double whammy. It was the Gavra and the Cheftza. He was a bad driver. And the Cheftza, his cars had the comfort of something engineered by John Deere. They had the aerodynamics of the Hoover Dam. Alta Yeshivish Jalapis that always broke down. And at one point the shul couldn't take it and they bought him a new car. I think they bought him a Chevy Malibu. For those not familiar, that is about akin to a Kia Rio, a Rio Kia. I know that has to be the cheapest one because whenever I rent, that's what they give me. And the next day he shows up in shul in his Alta, in his old car. Rabbi Kellermer, how did you pull this off? He had the magic to turn straw into gold. But how do you convert gold into straw? He said, there's no way I'm going to drive a new car when there are people in the community who can't afford schar limud. People can't afford their electric bill. They tried to give him a larger salary for his ever-expanding family. He said, there's people in the community who can't afford their kids, send their kids to summer camp. I'm going to take a larger salary? He was not so easy. He was a little difficult in this regard. Anyways, many stories about him driving in his cars that always would conk out. He usually had better mazel for them to conk out than on an Erev Shabbos. One Friday afternoon, he's driving back to West Hempstead very, very late before Shabbos, and then the car spluttered its last gasp. And there he was on Sunrise Highway. I have to be honest with you. First of all, I'm not from New York. And I take objection to the names of the New York highways because they are Orwellian, they're pompous. I had a hard time getting here. I don't know why in the world they call it the Bronx, Cross Bronx Expressway. I could have crossed the Bronx jogging faster than I did on the Cross Bronx Expressway. This morning I was on the Van Wicked Expressway. Why did they do that? Where did they make up these names? Such pompous or well, Sunrise Highway, if anything, sundown. It is polluted. It's not pedestrian friendly. It's verstunken and redolent. And I don't know why they call it. These names are Orwellian and pompous. There's a story that a fellow wanted to get into one of these very swanky, waspy country clubs. And he applied and everything seemed to be going well. He said, one last question, sir. What's your religion? He said, I'm Jewish. I'm sorry. We're out of room. There's no room for you in this, our country club. But he really wanted to be part of the club. So he waited 2 years. And he knocked on one of his very pompous-sounding non-Jewish names. He reapplies, and what's your name, sir? Henry Hutchinson Parkway III. Oh, very good, very good. Okay, Mr. Henderson Parkway III. Where do you live? I have an estate in Westchester. I raise horses. What do you do for a living? I have a seat on the stock exchange. One last question, Mr. Henry Hutchinson Parkway III. What's your religion? My religion? Why, I'm a guy. That was a joke. Okay, so very pompous names. Anyway, he's on the Sunrise Highway, which is anything but sundown, super sundown. He's trudging along. It's pouring rain, and the cars are shoving tidal waves upon him. When he finally arrives in West Hempstead, it's hours after shul is closed. The logical place to go would be home, certainly for his appetite. But instead, there was a simcha, a shalom zachar. What wouldn't he do to participate in someone's simcha? So he walks to the shalom zachar, and he comes in, and he looks like he just emerged from the Atlantic Ocean. And he said, he had a very warm sense of humor. He said, I'm very sorry, but there are cops all along the way. They were handing out tickets. I couldn't go too fast, lest they arrest me. We're going to skip a little bit, not that you would know. The boys from DRS put together weddings. They called them Chesed Chasnas. They would put together a wedding from soup to nuts for a couple that couldn't afford. And there's one couple, it was a ger who married a geyores, a convert and a convert. And everything was going well until it came time for the ksuba. The Chatan himself had bought the ksuba in a Judaica store, a conventional garden variety ksuba. But this is not a conventional garden variety wedding. So Rabbi Kelemer was there, and they went to Rabbi Kelemer. Now, I'm going to read to you just a few lines from a ksuba. Most of the people in this room have heard ksubas read at least 50 times. I wonder if I tell you two words, if you could tell me the third word. It's not something so familiar to us. I think I wrote it down. Yes. So see, help me out with this. And I'll read it at the speed they read a ksuba. Rabbi Kelemer took the ksuba, turned it over, and wrote by heart, this is a special nusach for ksuba, for this situation. There wasn't a hiccup, no one even noticed that there was a blink. His proficiency in halacha was legion. Dr. Dani Zivotofsky, who was a large animal veterinarian, among his clients were the Ringling Brothers Barn and Bailey Circus and the Belmont, the thoroughbreds in the Belmont Raceway. And by the way, if that name is familiar to you, his brother is pretty famous. No. Ari Zivotofsky, anyone? Guess not. Yes, looks like it. If not, wait for my forthcoming book. Ari Zivotofsky is the famous Jerusalem case, passport case. The United States did not recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. I have 18 children that were born in Jerusalem, and on their passport it says Jerusalem, without a country. Ari Zivotofsky's son Menachem was the first and youngest pro bono client of Nat and Eliza Lewin, and they put his case, which went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and he was born, it says on his passport, Menachem Zivotofsky. He says his name, Jerusalem, Israel. Menachem is now fighting in Gaza. So now, Dani Zivotofsky came home for intercession from veterinarian school, and he asked Rabbi Kelemer a few shailas about neutering. You have to imagine that neutering is a esoteric, abstruse, arcane, cryptic, obscure aspect of halacha that I mentioned esoteric. And Rabbi Kelemer said, like this. Look in Evan HaEzer, Pischei Tshuva, Sifkoten Hei, Sifkoten Aleph, right then and there, he had it. Like all of Shulchan Aruch at his fingertips. Rabbi Kelemer was visiting a member of his congregation in hospital in Manhattan, and this required hands-on attention, and it was an Erev Shabbos. And he stayed as late as he possibly could. And when he could stay no longer, helping her, easing her, comforting her, answering her shailas, he went outside and hailed a cab. Hey, Tack. Got a ring to it. More about the books later. Anyways, thank you, Benny. Hailed a cab. Hey, taxi. And everything went wrong. Now, how many of you, be honest and true, how many of you have ever been stuck in traffic on an Erev Shabbos? Okay, did you age 5 years? It's unbelievably terrible. I still get the screaming memes thinking about it. I once had in the car at least 12 of my kids, little babies, and I thought we were going to spend Shabbos on the Gothel's Bridge. Thinking about it. So it's Erev Shabbos. He's got half an hour to go. Everything that can go wrong goes wrong. He hails a cab. The driver does not speak English. He's extremely unfriendly. The traffic at best is stop and go. And finally, when he gets a little bit towards the direction of Queens, I mean, getting to West Hempstead was an impossibility. He has to abandon ship, which is a pretty appropriate metaphor considering the circumstances. He thanks the driver for the adventure. He steps outside into the rivulets. And he probably said to himself, okay, Rabbi Kelemer, if he spoke to himself in third person, what will it be? Will it be the Southern State, the Long Island Expressway, or the Grand Central Parkway? And he trudges on. And he's trudging on in this freezing, frigid rain. As every truck going by, he's sending a tidal wave upon him. When he finally arrives in West Hempstead, it's past midnight, and a boy came to the house to ask him a shaila. He said to this boy, I had a gewaldige walk. I had a terrific, fantab walk. What? On the way, I was able to answer a kasha from Rebbe Kivager. For those not familiar, the bar in yeshiva is Reb Knieger's Akasha. If Reb Knieger himself, the God of the Torah, couldn't answer the Akasha, and it lies and it remains a Tzarchiyum, forever since, in Yechidei Skula, in each generation, you may have one or two that will be answered to, suggest an answer to Knieger's Akasha. His feet were in this world, freezing in the rivulets. But as he sloshed into his Hempstead, his head was dancing and prancing in Shemayim, with a Bayan Rabbi, Rabbi Shmuel, the Shaman of the Sil. He's able to enter the Fnei Yeshua, and the Xos, and Fnei Yeshua of Kerry Zakash. I had a Gavaldigal walk. His head was not in this world. Now we could conjecture what would be the best place in the world to answer Rabbi Kerry Zakash. The answer would have to be in a Beis Medrash with other scholars and many Sfarim. And reverse antipodal conjecture, what would be the worst place? The Grand Central Parkway, where there are exhaust fumes and noise roaring like the surf, but his head was in Shemayim. Now, I just want to speak a little bit about his sensitivity. Bear with me a few more minutes. In 1984, the OU created Yachad, which is a platform of inclusion between NCSY teens and young adults with developmental disabilities. Now, the source of all NCSY events is always the Shabbaton, and nascent Yachad was looking for a shul that would embrace them, a rabbi that would be warm to them, and they struck gold with Young Israel of West Hempstead with Rabbi Kellenberg. The first Shabbaton, it was filled with Yachad kids, and he went over to each and every one. He asked them their name and where they're from. Then when he got up to speak an hour and a quarter later, he called out into the audience every single Yachad child by name. And their faces erupted into a smile. Their eyes began to mist. Never did they have so much attention. Their eyes were misting. Everybody else, their eyes were swimming. It became overnight, instantaneously, a Kleenex classic. Have a seat. See if you can find a chair somewhere. Struggle. We're talking about sensitivity. Rabbi Kellermer went to a bar mitzvah, not in his shul, probably somewhere in the greater environs. He walked to the shul, and when he got there, the local rabbi was giving a sermon. So as not to cause commotion, he waited outside. A woman walked in somewhat confused, and she starts tapping on Rabbi Kellermer's arm, and she says, "Is this where the bar mitzvah is?" He said, "Yes." Then she tethered herself to Rabbi Kellermer's arm, and she's talking to him, he's talking to her, and he asked her, "What's your name?" She said her name, he said, "What's your name?" Now, he didn't want to blow his cover, but he never went to Foggy Bottom. He was not schooled in CIA techniques and clandestine surreptitious methodology, but he wanted to keep his identity secret so as not to cause her any confusion or embarrassment. He said, he used his legal name, "My name is Jordan." "Jordan what?" He said, "Klummer." "Klummer?" "Yes, Klummer. Come on, what's your name?" "Klummer." "Jordan Klummer?" "It's Klummer." And she keeps pressing him, and he says, "Jordan Kellermer." "Kellermer," she said, and briefly untethered, said, "I heard that right around here, there's a Rabbi Kellermer. They say he's a wonderful man. Do you know who he is?" He said, "I heard of him." And he said, "Oh," she said, wait a second, "you're not Rabbi Kellermer, are you?" Now, this was not going the way that he wanted it. But there's always this moronic and basilic idiotic volunteer when you don't want them. He said, "Of course, this is Rabbi Kellermer." Not the way that he wanted it to go. He looked at her with a funereal look of, "I'm really sorry for your loss," but he had to blow his cover. Michal Talit is a woman who lives in West Hempstead. And she, like many mothers, probably planned her son's bar mitzvah for approximately 13 years. And approaching the 13th year, they had intended to invite in relatives and family and all their friends, and she even bought decorations for the shul. And then the pandemic hit. And instead of having family and friends, there was no one. Just a nuclear family. There wasn't a minyan. There wasn't a Kriyas Torah. He wasn't able to give the sermon that he had prepared so carefully. And she put the decorations up in the home to try and take a little bit of the morose atmosphere away from the situation. Rabbi Kellermer had been felled in a horrific accident, run over by a truck. It's a miracle he survived. It's a miracle his head was intact. It's a miracle that eventually he was able to walk again. In the beginning of the pandemic, and as you remember, I assume you remember, people were scared of their shadows. It is pouring rain. It's a microburst. My copy editor asked me if it always rains in West Hempstead. Anyway, so there's a knock on the door, which is not loud, but it's consistent. She finally goes to the door, and there is Rabbi Kelemer attempting to stay 180 degrees with his walker as the rain is beating down upon him, and she can't even open her mouth. There is a lump lodged in her throat. Her eyes begin to swim. Never has anything so sensitive ever been done to her. She can't even speak. She just wishes a good Shabbat. As he says, I'm so happy to come here and wish you a good Shabbos. I want you to know how proud we are of your son. And she can't even articulate a word. She nods her head, closes the door, and she runs upstairs. She wants to have a view from her second floor, unobstructed view, of this angelic man walking away on his, hobbling away on his walker, but he was gone, off to his next angelic mission. So outside there's forks of lightning, but Rabbi Kelemer, with his crescent smile, was able to show sunshine. He was the ultimate rainmaker when it came to other people's feelings. There's a woman, not a member of Young Israel, whose husband was at the end of his battle with cancer. And she didn't know what to do, but like everyone, she called Rabbi Kelemer. Rabbi Kelemer said, I'll be right there. It'll take me a little while, but I'll be right there. He was in Rhode Island. Now, to get from Rhode Island to West Hempstead is not like going from Hartford to West Hempstead. It's like going from Baltimore to West Hempstead. And he did. He came there. He stayed with her. He buried him. He consoled her. And he was on a weekly basis. He spoke to her on the phone. I'll be right there. There was a fellow in West Hempstead, his name is Richie Grossman, and one of his closest friend's wife had a C-section birth in the 27th week, and he didn't know what to do. This is his close friend, they're freaking out, the family is in Memphis, they had no one there. The first thing he did, he called Rabbi Kelemer, what do I do? And Rabbi Kelemer answered his question with a question, what hospital are they in? I'm not telling you what hospital they're in. You can't walk, you can't drive, you're not going. He said, I didn't ask you that. I asked you what hospital. I'm not telling you what hospital. And he persisted. And he didn't want to be disrespectful to his rabbi, but on the other hand, he couldn't allow him to, because he knew what he would do. So finally, in desperation, he said to him, all I'll tell you is a hint. To get to this hospital, you don't have to cross a bridge. And Rabbi Kelemer said, that's great. You've narrowed it down for me. And he did what he always did. There's a woman who had a knee replacement. I can't really describe this to you because, Baruch Hashem, I never had it. I'm told anything orthopedic is very, very painful. And there she was. She released from the hospital on Friday, and she was lying on her couch from Friday through Shabbos with ice packs and blankets and pillows. And then she sees at 1:30 in the afternoon, Shabbos afternoon, there is Rabbi Kelemer hobbling up her driveway with his walker. And she right away tosses the ice packs and the blankets and the pillows, and she tries to make herself look cheery. Rabbi Kelemer comes in, he said, good Shabbos, I was just coming home from shul. She lived 2.5 miles away. Rabbi Kelemer lived a block and a half from the shul. I was on my way home from shul, I wanted to wish you good Shabbos. And then he notices her walker, he said, let's have a race. And the two of them, like little children, they're racing around. And he put her in such a good mood. That was the bottom line. Wherever you met Rabbi Kelemer, you walked away more empowered and with a greater feeling. There's a basketball league. Eitan, you can explain this better than all of us. There's a basketball league out there in Long Island, and it's a yeshiva league, and they didn't want to allow boys from Solomon Schechter School into the league, for they felt they would have a detrimental influence. Rabbi Kelemer's approach was just the opposite. He said, maybe if we allow them in, we can have a good influence upon them. He had a certain derech haTorah of looking at things with the sensitivity. Likewise, in 2001, in May, there was a Jerusalem wedding which morphed into a disaster which turned out to be the greatest building collapse in Israel's history. The Versailles Wedding Hall collapsed, and 24 were killed, 300 were very seriously injured. It was a Shrek of a Shrek. By the way, this catastrophe, the silver lining, is that it was very instrumental in making Ichud Hatzala what it became today. This I know for a fact because my daughter is very senior, and Ellie Beer says I work for her. It made Ichud Hatzala become Hatzala into Ichud Hatzala. When you have a catastrophe, you can't have different branches. You need everyone to be united together. So that happened on a Thursday night. And Shul, someone approached him. It was clearly, and now there was a horrific wedding video which went around the world showing the catastrophe. And someone asked him, should we be praying for these people who clearly were not religious? Now, Young Israel of West Hempstead has 750 families. There are many, many minyanim. I don't know how many minyanim the rabbi attended, but on that Shabbos, he went to each and every one of them. He said to the people, I don't deserve to be called a rav. If people can ask me this question, should we be praying for others? He was extraordinarily disappointed. The custodian in Young Israel, his name was Tom Laverty, an Irish-American. The people in the shul jokingly referred to him as Rabbeinu Tom. And he was a fellow with a beer belly. He looked very, a person who was very familiar with beer. And when he was at the end of his life in Mercy Hospital, they told him, Mr. Laverty, it's time to call your priest. He said, nothing doing. Call my rabbi. And he had Rabbi Kellermer come to him at the end. And it's like father, like daughter. When his daughter Jennifer had some kind of diagnosis that was done by a specialist in the five towns, a religious Jewish person, he said, there's two methods to deal with your problem. There's A and B. A has this advantage. B has this advantage. B has this drawback. A has this drawback. I can just lay it out before you. What would you like to do? She said, I have to speak to my rabbi, she said. And Rabbi Kellermer came to the rescue. Okay, thank you for being so attentive. I'm going to end with a challenge. I call this the Rabbi Kellermer Challenge. There was a family not from West Hempstead, but out there in Long Island. If we'd have to peg and describe them, we could call them left of Young Israel, very modern family. And when the oldest boy, after day school, went to Israel for high school, after high school, for his gap year, he flipped. And he went to Shana Aleph in Yeshiva, which morphed into Shana Bet, transmogrified into Shana Gimel, and he became a lifer. And then the next girl, she went to Israel, and she too, Shana Aleph, Shana Bet, Shana Gimel, another lifer. And the parents were freaking out. What did they do wrong? They figured they had to check their mezuzahs. Then came their youngest child. There is no way in the world they're going to send her. That was not off the table. She was not going to Israel. They watched her like a hawk. They wouldn't even let her speak to anyone that had facial hair. And so this girl had not been exposed to extremely intense religious education. But one day the mother, in her kindness and sensitivity and largesse, bought her a beautiful puffer winter coat, something which goes on sale in Bloomingdale's, for $899. But this girl, Jennifer, even though she did not have much of yeshiva education, understood there's something inherently wrong with this coat. Because the coat was fire engine red. There were bells and klaxons and whistles that were blowing off from this coat. It was just not tsanua, inherently not modest to wear it. What was she to do? She didn't want to insult her mother. And if she insulted her mother, I think another one of these religious fanatics, what to do? Now, you might say that today, it's not just red that is so loud. There's canary yellow. There's hot pink. There's fluorescent orange. There's a lot of colors. Or you might say, you know, it's a conundrum, because who says to honor your parents trumps the laws of modesty? It's not a simple shiloh. Everyone said, the only thing you can do is go to Rabbi Kellermer. I know the person who brought the shiloh to Rabbi Kellermer. Rabbi Kellermer Well, we don't know what he paskened. We don't know what he paskened because the person who brought the shiloh is no longer living. I spoke to his widow, and she said, I remember the question. I do not remember the answer. But the challenge is, What can we do? Now, this is way, way above our pay grade. But we know for sure what Rabbi Kellermer would have done is figured out some kind of workaround that would be faithful to halacha, and yet would be sensitive to the mother and to the daughter in what to do. The Gemara says in Brachos Membeis that when Rav was nifter, they went to Babel for his levaya, and when they came back, they sat down to bench, and they had a shayla about benching, and they didn't know what to do. They said, if only Rav would be here, and they raised kriya, they ripped kriya again, because they recognized, not having Rav, that how great and how sharp the avelis the morning was. When we have these questions today, we realize what we're missing by not having Rabbi Kellermer. Now, by the way, that girl with the shayla is presently and currently in this room. That's not true, but it got your attention. Okay. So let me end by telling you that Young Israel of Woodmere, Young Israel of Upper West Hempstead, is a commuter community. Safe to assume that there's a lot of intelligent people there, and members on the board, like any community, that could give a rabbi a dynamic relationship with their cardiologist, but that didn't happen there. They all revered him, they all respected him. So therefore, to conclude, I'll tell you that Rabbi Kellermer traveled far. He went from Miami to Los Angeles, Los Angeles to New York, New York to Baltimore, Baltimore to Detroit, Detroit to Cleveland, Cleveland to Yerushalayim, to New York to Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim to Brookline, Brookline to West Hempstead, and on to heaven, if not higher. So thank you very much. And here's the announcement. We have a book promotion now. If you wish to buy a television, they're disgustingly cheap. I never sell books this inexpensively. They're really inexpensive. If you buy two books, you get another one. You get a third one for free. Basically, at this price, you lose money if you don't buy a book. If you buy, but it goes worse. If you buy four books, then you get two for free. If you buy six books, I pay you. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you so much. Yeah.